So we are holding on page Chof Aleph in Sanhedrin, top of the Amud Oismendez. We learned last time about how the Gemara had brought a couple of psukim, a pasuk that refers to the Torah as Tushia. And then we discussed why is the Torah called Tushia, and the Gemara had given a few reasons for it. Mateshes Koichas Shel Adam, it weakens a person's strength. Nitna B'Hashayim B'Nei HaSatan, it was given in secret to evade the Satan. Dvarim Shel Toihu Sha'ilu Meshusas Aleihem. I mean, there are other explanations that Mefarshim give as well. For example, there's an interesting explanation that the word Tushia comes from the word Yesh, as in something of substance. The Torah is the only real thing that exists of substance, therefore it is called Tushia compared to everything else. So now the Gemara brings another thing regarding Tushia, another pasuk that mentioned that refers to Tushia, and that has to do with learning Torah. Omar Ullah, Machshava Me'ela Safilu L'Divrei Torah. A machshava is me'elas, and now the word me'elas can have a couple of different meanings. It can mean effective, and we'll talk about in a moment. It can also mean meloshen me'ila, as in disloyal. So let's first talk with the simple meaning. Machshava me'elas. Machshava is effective, afilo l'divrei Torah, even regarding words of Torah. So Rashi explains two things. First of all, it means machshava, as in when a person has thoughts about worries about his parnasa or whatever, about his mezonos. So me'elas, that is effective and causes the person even to forget his learning. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, mefer machshavos arumim, Hashem foils and wounds the thoughts of the arumim, of the people who are tricky and thinking about different thoughts, about and overthinking things, basically. So that their hands are not able to do tushia. So Rashi's first explanation is what it means is you have these people who are arumim, they're worried about their mezonos. So mefer Hashem cancels out those thoughts of theirs, which until now that was preventing them from being able to focus on their learning. Now Hashem takes away those machshavas and allows them, therefore, to focus on their learning. Then Rashi's second explanation is just the opposite. The machshava we're talking about, where a person makes for himself plans. I plan to learn. I plan to accomplish such and such by a certain time. So many times, me'elas, it's effective in the sense it ends up being, the thoughts end up canceling it out. It prevents it from happening. He thinks, mensch tracht Gott lacht, and all similar expressions like that. So he has all these thoughts and plans, and it ends up, Hashem makes it that doesn't work out. So even the Divrei Torah, a person thinks to himself, I plan to finish a certain thing of learning, such and such number of mesechtas or whatever, learning by a certain amount of time. So then the pasuk is saying, mefer machshavos arumim v'lo yisaseni yedein, and Tushia, that the person has these thoughts, and even as far as Tushia, even as far as learning Torah, Hashem will cause them to be frustrated and not actually happen. With the exception, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, if he's learning Torah Lishma. Why is he not so much punished? But in other words, because he's relying on himself too much. I am going to accomplish this by such and such a point. Where's the Eibush there in it? Tosfos brings first the same explanation as Rashi's first explanation, that he's so worried about his mezonos, and therefore that causes him to forget about everything else, including Divrei Torah. Then Tosfos brings a second explanation that the word me'elas, somewhat similar to the Tosfos' second explanation is broadly similar to Rashi's second one, but he explains that the word me'elas in that connection means meloshen me'ila, as in it ends up causing it to be made false. He's going to think, whether he thinks he plans to become rich, or even he plans to accomplish X amount in Divrei Torah, he's not going to manage it unless, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, he's doing lishma. If he says in Yitz Hashem, maybe that's enough, but maybe we're talking about he doesn't say that. Marsha says yet another answer, that what it can mean is, Divrei Torah, the main thing is that Now you think thoughts of Torah, but that's not enough. It's not enough to learn Torah Machshava. You actually have to speak it out verbally. Akim asfas of having ma'isa. So meif from Machshavei Sarumim. If a person thinks that he's going to be an orum and he's going to be smart about it and sharp about it and just learn Torah Machshava, meifer, then Hashem causes it to be foiled and canceled out. V'loy sasseni yadayim tushia, and he doesn't end up doing the ma'isa of learning Torah unless he actually puts in the ma'isa and does dibur. Just thinking about it alone is not going to be enough. The Gemara actually mentions an Eruvin. It's one of the Levushim of the Nefesh, but apparently it's not enough. The Alter Rebbe makes the point in Tanya. Yeah, you have to connect it more. The dashmius of your body and everything, and therefore you have to actually speak out the words. In Eruvin, by the way, the Gemara tells us in Masechta Eruvin, a Talmud of, I think, Rebbe Eliezer, I don't remember, that he was learning Torah, just looking at the words, just thinking them, not saying them, and eventually Yitzhak forgot his learning. What? Matin Mepeh, yeah. Bruria goes and kicks one of the Talmidim who's learning quietly and tells him, yeah, Arucha Bakol Shmura, it has to be completely absorbed in all your Evorim, including your mouth, yeah. This is also, by the way, why we shuckle when we're learning, so it's not just our mouths are involved, the whole body is involved. It's one of the reasons, anyway. Then you have various other points. Ion Yaakov says a point as well that you have a person has a machshava ra, so we know in machshava ra in a kodesh baruch hu mitzvah for the ma'isa, but it does cause that his plans get frustrated. On the other hand, as the Gemara is going to say, if he learns lishma, then it means, in other words, the Torah itself prevents, the Torah itself saves him from machshava zaris. So, Omar Rabba, im asukim lishma enim elas. If they are learning Torah lishma, then all these plans and thoughts and so forth are not going to prevent him from accomplishing what he needs. Shenema, as the pasuk says, rabbis machshavas belevish. There are many thoughts in the hearts of a man. Vatzas Hashem hisukum. But the counsel of Hashem is what will stand. So meaning, Eitza Sheyesh B'Dvar Hashem, when you have a counsel, when you have an idea, I'm going to accomplish such and such, and there is a Dvar Hashem, and he Sokum La'olam, that will last forever, and Itaka will be successful, whether it's in the Milud Alma, or in the Torah, that he's setting himself out to accomplish. Like you said, if he says, Amir Tzashem, if he recognizes that it's not his own doing that's going to accomplish it all, it's the Eivishter helping him out to do it. There is, by the way, another understanding of Machshava Me'elos, which at the very beginning of Lakuta Diburim, the first Sicha in Lakuta Diburim is Shmini Atzeret Tzadik Gimel. The Friedrich Rebbe begins with those words, Machshava Me'elos, meaning in the positive sense that the thoughts, especially of the Rebbe, about his Chassidim have a positive effect on them. And it mentions over there that one of the Chassidim asked the Friedrich Rebbe, I mean, how do we know that's Taka so? And the Friedrich Rebbe tells him, think of where you were last year at this time, versus where you are now. In other words, the implication is that the Friedrich Rebbe's thoughts about him helped get him out of Russia and get him to be able to be there now in the free world. So that's Machshava Me'elos in a positive sense. Okay. I'm not familiar with the story. Tell me. Okay.
He got pulled out. There's a note for thinking about you.
Come to think of it, yeah, I think I vaguely remember hearing that story. I don't remember. Come to think of it, you also have the story of Pinchas Reitzis, where he can't make it to the Alter Rebbe in Lajna for Tishrei, but he's sitting in a sukkah and he calls out, Oy Rebbe, the Rebbe was just thinking about me, and just at that time in Lajna, the Alter Rebbe mentions about Pinchas that I'll do for him whatever I can, and the vort is that Pinchas had given over his nefesh ruach neshama to the Alter Rebbe in Yechidus, and therefore they have this connection between them. Okay. Further on in the Perek, it starts talking about, again, a large part of the Perek deals with dinim of who is kosher and posel la'edus. So the Mishnah talks about the concept that relatives are posel la'edus, not just Latova, but also Lara, and you have various degrees of relatives, and the Gemara spends a lot of time discussing how far, how distantly related can people be for one of them to give Eidos on behalf of the other. There's actually, speaking of Chassidish stories, there's one in Sfor Chassidim in that connection and involving, I think, the Avnei Nezer, where when he was a boy one time, he and his father were talking about the point in Halacha, that that the fact is a relative can't give aiders for the good of his of his relative, but also not for his bad. You might say, well, if it's for the bad, what's the problem? Obviously, he's not putting any bias over there, but nevertheless, there's a cause that it can't. And the Avnei Nezer, then a boy, pointed out that in the same vein, since we're Boni Matim Lashem Alekeichem, therefore the Eidoshka can't give any bad aiders on us on Rosh Hashanah or any time in the Yimei Adin, necessarily any such aiders has to be thrown out or something to that effect. Anyway, so the Gemara brings in this connection. So where do we know this from? Is that the Gemara brings the pasuk lo yumsu oves habonim. So the Gemara says ma tamud loyma. What is that pasuk coming to teach us? In the lamed shlo yumsu oves ba'avoin bonim uvonim ba'avoin oves. Does it mean exactly what it sounds like? That children, that fathers are not to be punished or executed for the averus of their children or vice versa. You don't need the whole pasuk for that. Harei kvar nemar ish b'cheta yumosu. The pasuk continues by saying that each person is going to be killed for his own averus. Now, on a pashut sense, there is. In other words, you find, for example, in Melachim it says that to one of the kings of Yehuda named Amatzia, his father had been assassinated. His father Yehoyash had been assassinated by a couple of guys, and the pasuk says Amatzia executed the assassins, but not their children, as the pasuk says. So, in the most pashut sense, yeah, the pasuk is telling us pashut that. You know, kings back then would often do that kind of thing. You have in closer to our times, you hear these kinds of things in communist Russia and in other dictatorships and places like that. You know, one person does something and his whole family is executed or sent off to prison camps or whatever. So in Pashut Pshat, it means that. But the Gemara says it has to mean more than that. Elo. Lo yumsu oves habonim means be'edus bonim. Fathers are not to be executed. Al bonim means be'edus bonim through the edus of their sons. Uvonim lo yumsu al oves means be'edus oves when their fathers are testifying. So that's where we learn the basic concept that relatives cannot give edus regarding the other. The Gemara asks, "Bonim ba'avon oves loy." Are you telling me it never happens that children are punished for the averus of their fathers? V'oksiv, doesn't the pasuk say "Poched avoin oves albonim"? So Hashem does remember the averus of the fathers through the children, and the answer is "Hosam k'shoosin ma'aseh v'seim b'yadeim." That's talking about when the children follow in the ways of their parents. So then, now when Hashem punishes them, He's punishing them not only for their own averus but also for the averus of their fathers, which they continued. In other words, they should have realized already that this is a no good thing to do, and they should have realized to do differently. And then, when not, then the Eidoshter takes it out on them as well.
He has got no chosobis
is one thing. You find that, by the way, I think the Malbim points it out. Speaking of the kings in Sefer Melachim, I think the Malbim points out that you find this with the Malchei Yisrael. You have there'll be a Melech Yisrael, a new dynasty, a new guy who becomes king, and he'll have a normal length reign, 20 years, whatever it is. Then when he dies and his son takes over, who's equally much as Rosha as him, then that son will be gone in 2 years. Like the Eved has no patience for him already. If he's father following in his father's way, then that's it. He's a goner already. One exception we have to that actually is Achav, whose father Omri started a new dynasty. Achav Taka had a nice long reign. We'll learn at the end of Mor Masechta in Perek Chelik when we talk about all the guys who have no Chelik Lelem Abba. Achav being one of them, we'll talk about why Achav was special, what was his chus that he got a long reign. But anyway, so Ochsin Maisev is saying Viadeim, then Taka they're punished for their father as Avedis as well. Kedetania, as in fact we learn in Abraisa. The pasuk says in the Torah, "The af ba'avonis avoisam itam yimoku." That also they're going to be pining away and melting away in golos. Yimoku literally means like rotting away in golos, and also because of the averus of their fathers that are with them, they're going to rot away. So that means what's the avonis avoisam shoosin ma'aseh v'seim b'yadeim when they're holding on to the same ma'asim as their ancestors and they're not doing tshuva. So the Braisa says, "Ata oimik sh'oichzin." So you're saying that it means when they're doing that. Oin elik sh'oichzin. Maybe not. Maybe it means even that the children themselves are tzaddikim, and Hashem is taking out on them anyway what their fathers did. No, sh'oimik ish b'chete yumosu. Again, the pasuk says that each person dies for their own avera. Harek sh'oichzin ma'aseh v'seim b'yadeim. Then that means clearly then the one in the Torah that says va'af va'avonis avoisam itam must be where they still have those averis itam together with them and they still continue doing those averis. Yeah, in fact, Yechezkel at the time of the new, around the time of the first, around the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon, Taka has a long nevuah on the subject where people in his times are arguing, look, you know, you Nevi'im are telling us the Churban and the Golos are about to come, but are we really any worse than our ancestors? Hashem is just taking it out on us because of what our ancestors did, and they're arguing it's not just of Hashem. And Yechezkel gives them a long illustration to illustrate the idea that no, when you have a father as a tzaddik and his son is a rasha, and then the grandson is weiter a tzaddik, then no, neither one gets anything from the previous one. The son, the rasha, doesn't get saved by his father's chusin, and the son, the tzaddik, doesn't get punished for his father's aveiros. Now, Shah points out, then, you have an interesting nuance in the psukim that shows this point. At the end of the Torah, this is the Torah in Parashas Bechor Karisai, which we read a couple of weeks ago. So we have the expression, first you have the psukim are in second person. V'anisharim b'chem yimaku b'avaneseichem be'eretz oyveichem. So it's also in second person, the ones left over from you in the land of your enemies will rot away in Golos, etc. And then it continues, though, va'afta avonis avois sum itam yimaku. And also in the averus of their fathers, they will rot away. So all of a sudden it switches to third person. So now Maharsha says, because when you get down to it, you have the Teuchecha in Bechor Karisai, you also have the one in Kisavai. Now, to a certain extent, the one in Bechor Karisai is primarily about the Churban Bayis Rishon. The one in Kisavai is primarily about the Churban Bayis Sheni. The Ramban, for example, points out in Chumash, the first one you have mention of Avodah Zarah that's going to be destroyed. The second one, there's not a word about Avodah Zarah because in the second Beis Hamikdash, they weren't worshipping Avodah Zarah anymore. There were other problems. So therefore, Maharsha says that here we're talking about within the first Teuchecha itself, we're kind of switching gears over here. First you have, they were doing Avodah Zarah, but on the other hand, there was no Hester upon him yet. The Eibishter is still showing his face clearly to them. There's still Nevor. There's still Urim V'Tumim. Therefore, everything is in second person. Hashem is appearing directly to you and speaking directly to you. But now, when he starts speaking about how the long Golos, how for hundreds and thousands of years we're going to be in Golos, then really it's a time of Hester upon him. There's no Nevor. There's no Urim V'Tumim. There's no nothing. Therefore, it switches to third person. Yimaku ba'avoinam. They will rot away in Golos because of their Avera, namely the special Avera that the people had at the time of the Churban Bayis Sheni, namely Sinas Chinam. The Ach Ba'avonas Avonam Itam Yimaku, because they also keep that Maisa Avisein Biyadeim, and therefore they end up getting for that as well. So it's both, in other words. So the Gemara says, oh, she'en oichzen uvaloi. You're telling me even when they're not holding on to their father's avedus, then they don't get punished for their father's avedus. V'choshlu ish ba'achim. We see that the pasuk says also in the Teuchecha, one person will stumble over another person. Poshet sense, it means, in other words, like a goyim, are going to be chasing them, and in their panic, people will trip over each other as they're running away. But we understand, ish va'achiv also means ish va'avoin achiv. One person will trip and stumble because of the aveira of his brother, of his fellow yid. Maharsha points out, because of why v'chosh lu in the plural, if it just meant that one person will trip over another, then v'chosh shal, would say. V'chosh lu suggests that it's a more general thing. From here we learn that all Jews are responsible for one another, and one person does an Aveda, everybody else is held responsible. Well, in that case, then the same thing should be with the fathers and the sons. And the answer is Hosim, because there we're talking about where one Yid has the ability to be Moicha on another, to protest the other one's Avedas, and he doesn't, therefore he's held responsible. We find Taka at the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon, the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, based on Psukim and Yechezkel, that Hashem sent out a group of Malachim whose job it is to mark everybody's forehead, those who are going to live are going to be marked with a tuff written in ink, the ones who are going to die are going to be marked with a tuff written in blood. And then the Gemara goes on to say over there that the Midas Adin argued that even the ones that were to be marked for life, nevertheless, they could have been Moicha, and they weren't, and the Eibishter accepted the argument, and all of them were marked to be executed. And the Gemara has a whole sugya over there about this point, that a person is able to be Moicha and doesn't, then he's held responsible for the other person's Aveda as well. So that's V'choshlu Ish Ba'achiv. So in other words, in short, what we have over here is then, so one person can be punished for another's Averus when it's sons, when it's children who continue in the ways, in the Averus of their ancestors, then when the punishment comes, it comes for what their ancestors did as well as what they did, because they're compounding it. And also, if a person is able to be Moicha on other people and he's not, then also the punishment includes him as well. But other than that, we say that lo yumsu ovis albonim uvonim lo yumsu alovis. The Gemara in Shabbos does mention, this is all talking about as far as adult children. The Gemara in Shabbos mentions, and he comes up here and there in Shas, that little children is different. They're considered to a certain extent the nechosim of their parents, and therefore Rahman al-Fan can happen that the parents are chai of something and Hashem takes away their children for that. All right. Further on in the perek, it talks about, once we go through all these dinim of who's kosher and posel later, so it starts talking about the actual procedure. What? So Aaron HaKohen and his kids, so it's a little bit of both. I mean, if Aaron himself was held responsible for the Chet HaEgel, and he was supposed to lose all his children, and Moshe had to daven for him, so keep him mechtes, so took care of half of it, so two of his children stayed alive, but still, you also have that Nadav and Avihu themselves, you have all the various explanations of Chazal of what they did wrong, that they themselves were Chayiv Misa. Which Allah's only summer? Are you asking why they would have been, given that they were adults? I don't know. That's a good point. I don't know. Further on in the parak, after we go through all this about the kashrus and pasul sevedim and all that, we start getting into the actual procedure of based in first for dinin mominus, and then the next parak is going to talk about dinin nefashis. So one thing in the Mishnah, when it talks about the procedures for dinim mominus, it says ma'aymin ala edim. We have to warn the edim. Ma'aymin literally means we have to frighten them. We have to try to scare them. We have to try to scare them straight in case the edim are coming with false edus. We have to tell them something that will scare them straight, so that if they are actually planning to lie, then we'll convince them not to go through with that. Which in fact, we're going to have a point that comes up later in the Masechta, Kivin Shehigid Shuvein Chozer Magin. If the Edim do give Edus and they go through the cross-examination and everything checks out and based in decide the verdict, the Edim don't have the ability afterwards to go and say, you know what, we were lying or we were whatever. We're going to have the famous story of the Shimon and Shatach and his son. We'll have later on all about that. So therefore, based in has to make sure to begin with, that if the Edim are going to lie, that we tell them something that should convince them not to do that. So the Gemara says, "Hey, Chiyamin and Lahu." So what exactly do we tell them? What kind of thing do we tell them to dissuade them from testifying falsely? Ian Yaakov points out, now there is a point we learned in the first parak, for example, that they have to be aware who they're testifying on behalf of, really fundamentally any edus, even though it's on behalf of, or it's on behalf of, or against some boss of a dumb, the Eivishter is involved as well, and they're testifying before Hashem, or me also be part of Mehem, but nevertheless, that would actually be a warning, not just to the Beistin, not just to the Edim, but also to the Beistin. Here we're talking about the Beistin themselves. Has to give a warning to the Edim, so it has to be something more than that. And it can't just mean, in other words, that, and the point is also, if we're talking about Dinin Mominus Mela, in the next paragraph we're going to talk about Dinin Nefashis, we're going to talk about a whole different level of Iyum that they give them for that, because Dinin Nefashis, if they cause somebody to be executed, there's no bringing them back. Here, they could always think to themselves, okay, so let's say we gave false Edus and we caused Reuven to have to pay money to Shimon. So what? We can always, later on, we can get things set right and then see to it that Shimon pays back the money to Reuven. So they're not going to be scared off by such a thing. We have to tell them something that's going to prevent them, that's going to dissuade them from doing such ages in the first place. So what do we tell them? We tell them based on the following pasuk: Nesiim v'ruach v'geshem oyin. There can be clouds and wind, so it looks like a rainstorm is coming. V'geshem oyin, and yet there's no rain. What causes that kind of thing? Ish mishalo b'matas shoker. When a person prides himself on a false gift. So this means, in other words, when a person is planning to testify falsely, the result is that the Eivishter causes that rain then doesn't fall. So there's going to be a drought. So that will scare them straight, maybe. You know, they don't want there's going to be a drought. There's going to be a rise in prices. People will die of hunger, etc. How is that called Makas Shoker? So the Yad Raman, the Gemara, points out one thing is that that they sometimes, as we're going to talk about in a minute, false edim get paid for their testimony. So that's the Makas Shoker. They're receiving a gift for a falsehood, and therefore, so they might be priding themselves on that. Look how we managed to earn ourselves a few dollars for this. So therefore, we tell them, you realize the result of that is going to be a drought. Marsha points out another meaning of it as well, that let's say, for example, you could have that the edim are thinking to themselves, you know what, I owe Pliny money, but I don't have what to pay him. So you know what? I'll manipulate things. I'll go give false aiders against the other guy who's against him in Dayston, and that way he'll end up paying him, and that way we'll make it happen that way. But that's still Maka Strucker. However, Amalei Rava, but Rava says to Rabbi Yehuda, that doesn't really work. Yachli Lameimer, these Edim, these potential false Edim, they can rationalize to themselves and say it won't be as bad as all that. They can say, as a popular expression goes, Shev Shni, have a kafna, there was a 7-year long famine for Abava de Umna Lech Cholif, and yet it never passed by the door of the craftsman. In other words, so you have a person who's a Baal Malacha, a person who knows how to make himself a good parnasa, so he won't be affected by the famine. Yeah, it means there'll be inflation, there'll be a rise in prices. Fine, if a person is making a comfortable parnasa, he's not going to be so affected by that. Marsha points out an interesting remez to this in the Psukim. When do we have a famous 7-year famine in Jewish history? Is the one in Mitzrayim that Yosef predicted. In the end, it was only 2 years, but anyway, whatever. When Yosef's brothers come to Mitzrayim, Pare says to them, Mama Seisem, what do you do for a living? That's a very goyish kind of way, by the way, you're introduced to somebody and the first thing you ask is what they do for a living. So Marsha says there's a remez in it to this kind of thing. If you guys have a craft, if you have a trade, if you have a good way of making parnasa of your own, then what are you so worried about the famine that you have to schlep all the way to Mitzrayim? So they answer, well, we're shepherds and we depend on there being a supply of food and of grass, and we don't have a miral atzoyin asher lavadecha, and that's why we had to come here. In other words, implying, yeah, you're right, Pare, had we had some other kind of trade that didn't involve the land, then we tackle wouldn't be so bad off in the famine, but yeah. So Rava says, so the point is, Rava is saying that method of telling them is not going to work. They're just going to rationalize to themselves, and they're not going to be worried about the consequences. Ella, Omar Rava, Amrinan Lahu. So rather, Rava says, here's a different thing we can tell them, based on another pasuk. Mapates, a sledgehammer, the cherev, and a sword, the chetz shonun, and a sharpened arrow. All of these are understood to be the tool. Rashi explains all of these are understood to be the tools of a Malach HaMavis, meaning that there's going to be an epidemic. Ish oyne bereehu, aid shocker, and it's a result of one person saying against somebody else false witness. So in other words, the result of false edim is dever bala olam, that plague and then epidemics come to the world. So this is going to scare the edim straight, because that's not something an umna, a craftsman, is going to be able to save himself from. So won't that scare them into saying the truth? However, Omalei Rav Ashi, argues back to him and says, Yachli Lameimer, still the Edom can rationalize to themselves, and they can say, Shev Shni, as the expression goes, Shev Shni, have a Moisana, there was a 7-year-long epidemic, the Inish Boy Shnei Lo Shchiv, and yet nobody died, not in his right time. In other words, Eibishter decides how long a person has to live. There's an epidemic, or more people are dying than usual. Okay, it means the Eibishter decided in advance that their time is up at that time. Doesn't mean, therefore, they're going to rationalize to themselves, doesn't mean that anybody's going to, that we're in any danger of dying any younger than we would have because of our false aiders. The Orach Haner points out, by the way, this even if they did try to rationalize like that, it is in fact incorrect. The fact is, sometimes it does happen, a person dies younger than he was supposed to. There's Gemara, an interesting Gemara in Chagiga, that tells about how the Malach HaMavis or his Meshosim, whatever, can make a mistake and take the wrong person's Neshama at the wrong time, so it's not even really true, but nevertheless, people are great at rationalizing things, so they may think that way. It's a pretty serious mistake. Yeah, the Gemara deals with how they make the thing right after all, but
It's strange how they believe in God, but they don't. they believe that Hashem is going to...
No, Hashem runs the world, but in other words, they're saying...
He's not going to see what they are lying about.
Right, well, you're talking about these Edom, right? Yeah. So Ella Amar Ravashi, Omali Nosen Bamazutra. So Ravashi says, here's the deal. Nosen Bamazutra told me, this is what we tell them. Amri Lahu, we tell the Edim, Sadi Shakori, false Edim, Augraihu Zili. Even to those who hire them are considered degraded, worthless people. In other words, you think about it. You have somebody hires false Edim. He's obviously not such a great guy himself, but even he looks down on the people who are willing to accept his offer and testify falsely for a few bucks. So in other words, we appeal to their own sense of self-worth. And this is a powerful thing. A normal person has a certain sense of self-worth, a certain sense of self-respect, and so we use that to get them to do the right thing. I'll derech like there's something involving one of the chassidim of the Alter Rebbe. I don't remember now which one. Where if he was tempted to do an avera, he would say to himself, "You should do an avera. You are a chassid of the Alter Rebbe. You are the schosh of a guy or whatever." And with that, the gaiva saved him basically. So we kind of appeal to their own sense of gaiva. Yeah. Dichtiv, as we find the pasuk, you have the famous story with Achav and Novos. Achav wants Novos' vineyard, and to make a long story short, they trump up a case against Novos to have him accused of something that makes him chayiv misa, so that Achav can get the vineyard. And the pasuk describes when Izevel is sending them, to the skenim in that city to tell them the instructions of how to go about the thing. She says, "V'hoshivu shnayim anoshim bnei b'liyal negdoi." You should have sit two bnei b'liyal, which means b'liyal. Means bli oil that don't have any fear of any yoke of fear of Hashem on them. Two such people should sit next. They should sit in front of him. The iduhu, and they should say edus against him. Lemo saying beirachta elikim emelach, that you cursed Hashem and the king by saying he cursed the king. The cursed Hashem would make him chayiv skila, and by saying he cursed the king would mean that he'd be murdered by malchus and his property is forfeit to the government. So we see, in other words, that in the very message, we're calling these people, the whoever you can find who would be willing to accept such a who would be willing to accept such an offer and give such false aiders, we call them Bnei Belial. So like even the people themselves, even Izevel herself was a no good nick, and even the Skenim over there who are doing the whole thing, they would look down at such people as Bnei Belial, as worthless people, as people who have no oil, no yoke of a fear of Hashem, and therefore that's what we tell the Edim. So in practice, the Kesef Mishnah points out on the Rambam, and the Meiri explains, it's not an either-or thing. All of these are true. Try the first one. If that doesn't work, if you see the Edom are not taking it seriously, then try the second one. If need be, then try the third one. Each one, you use whichever one you think is going to be effective against these particular Edom.
Very interesting. That first two is like scary scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
Hunger and famine. That
and plague and whatever, and that might not take, but to appeal to their self-respect, yeah.
Yeah,
that's the point. Sometimes a person might rationalize to themselves, okay, things will happen to other people, it won't happen to me, but once it's negated to them, then already, yeah. What?
Nobody wants to be considered.
Nobody wants to be, okay. Further on, the Gemara talks about that, yeah, there's certain cases where if a person now we have like this, the dayanim are not allowed to act as lawyers on behalf of either side, like having to pass atzmocha ka'urcha dayanim. But sometimes you have a case where a person pashut can't put the words together to make a certain taina. He can't think of a certain taina that would help him out, especially in dinin nefashos. So then the Gemara talks about that your Beis Din is responsible to bring up any argument in the guy's favor that he might not have been able to think of himself, because by dinin nefashos, especially, you want to make sure you give the guy every possible chance to exonerate himself. However, the Gemara says, we don't do that for a Mesis. If a Mesis comes up with an argument on his own behalf, sure, we'll listen to it just like anybody else, but we're not going to advance any argument on his behalf. Ion Yaakov points out of it here, as a practical matter, a Mesis is a very smooth talker, so he ought to know how to be able to say anything in his own defense. If he can't, then there's no reason Beis Din should speak up for him. So Amar of Shmuel bar Nachman, Amar of Yonasan, Minayin Shein Torah L'Mesis. How indeed do we know this concept that we don't argue or that we don't bring up arguments in favor of a Mesis when he's on trial? So, Minochash HaKadmoni. We learn it from the story of the Nochash HaKadmoni, where the Eivishter just passes sentence on him without even allowing him to speak up for himself. You look in the Pesukim over there, the Eivishter first confronts Adam, Ayeka, and Adam gives an excuse, and then and she answers and she blames it on the Nachash. Then immediately he brings down the hammer, and this and this and this is going to be your punishment. No chance for the Nachash to speak up. Why? The Nachash could have brought up many arguments in his own favor. And yet he didn't. Hashem didn't give him an opportunity to. And Hashem didn't advance those arguments on his behalf. So why did Hashem not do that? Well, that's it. Because the Nachash himself didn't mention those arguments. Therefore, the Eibishter didn't bring them up. It didn't bring them up on his behalf. So, what arguments are we talking about? My Havalei L'Memer. What could the Nachash have said on his own behalf? He could have said, what, Adam and Chava are blaming me that I suggested them to eat from the Eitz HaDaat? Divrei Rav, Divrei Talmud, Divrei Mishraimin. And if the Rav tells you something and the Talmud tells you something else, who are you supposed to listen to? The Rav. Divrei Rav Shraimin. So what are they doing? So what are they doing blaming it on me and fobbing off that they listened to me? They should have known. You listen to the Eibishter and not to the Nachash.
Probably hear it directly from
Hashem
or no?
I did not hear it directly from Hashem. We'll talk about that point in a minute. So Maharsha points out, that's one taina. What does Harbe tainus? So Maharsha says, fine, but there's another point as well, which the Gemara is going to go on to say now about Kola Mosif Gerdea. So that's a second taina then. Because after all, we know that Adam added to the Tzibui, and Chava in turn, when she's speaking to the Nachash, adds it, that it's not just not to eat from the Eitz HaDaat, but also not to touch. So therefore, so the Nachash is saying also,
so
Chava said it. Chava said it to the Nachash, but Adam had previously said it to her.
Not to touch it, yeah.
That's the famous thing that Adam made a siyog for, we know, we have to make a siyog la Torah, so Adam made. A number of the Mefarshim point out over here that the problem wasn't making the siyog in and of itself. The problem was not clarifying what was from the Eibishter versus what was his own addition. So had Adam made that clear, Hashem said not to eat from it. I'm adding, as a siyog, we shouldn't touch it either. So then it would have been clear to Chava, as we know what happened. The Nachash pushed her against the tree, and nothing happened. And the Nachash says to her, well, if touching the tree didn't harm you, then neither was eating from it. And therefore, and then in that way, he convinced her to eat from it, and everything developed from there. Whereas had she known clearly that the touching is only a gzera, then that wouldn't have affected her. Actually, Maharsha refers over here to an interesting point that he says in Gemara and Sota on the subject. The Gemara says over there the Nachash plan that Adam will eat from the Eitz HaDaat and die, and then the Nachash will be able to marry Chava. Well, how? If he had Chava eat from the Eitz HaDaat first, how does he not figure that she herself is going to die from it? And Maharsha explains an interesting idea. Given that when the Eibishter told the Tzibui to Adam, Chava hadn't been created yet. Okay, she's attached to Adam at that point, back to back, or as an extra piece, according to the different opinions in the Gemara, but she hadn't actually directly heard the Tzibui from the Eibishter. She heard it through Adam. So now, then the Nachash took the view, well then, if Chava eats from the Eitz HaDaat, nothing's going to happen to her. After all, she's not Oyvana Tzivuri of Hashem directly to her. So therefore, she'll convince Adam, he'll eat it, he'll die, he'll be out of the picture, and then Chava, and then Chava will be mine. So Maharsha points out that the Nachash could have had at least two tainus in his favor, and yet he didn't bring up those tainus, and the Eibishter didn't bring them up on his behalf either. Ion Yaakov points out, okay, well, that's two arguments. The fact is, the Gemara is saying many arguments, so what's the many? And he says, fine, because we can use the same metaphor in different ways. Divrei Rav, Divrei Talmud, Divrei Av, Divrei Ben, Divrei this and that. You have all the different ways in which we talk about our relationship with Hashem. You could have used each one of them. In each one of them, you say you listen to the superior and not to the lesser one. Now, Tosfos points out like this, though. Fine, so you're saying the Nachash didn't argue these things, but had he argued them, then Hashem would have had to pay attention to those tainus. Fine, what about every garden variety maces? And in all the thousands of years after that, if Reuven goes and tries to convince Shimon to worship Avodah Zarah, and Shimon Taka listens, can't Reuven potter himself with the same argument? He'll say in Basin, Divrei Rav, Divrei Talmud, Divrei Mishraimin, what do you want from me? Even if he doesn't listen. So Tosfos answers the difference is the Nachash was not actually told, don't be Mesis. On the other hand, Reuven is told, there's a mitzvah in the Torah, don't be Mesis, a fellow Yid. So when he's Mesis, another Yid, whether he's successful or not, either way, just for being Mesis, he's already been over on Divrei Harav. So he doesn't have that excuse. But the Nachash could have gotten away with that excuse had he had the chance to say it. The Gemara continues, Amachiskiya, minayin shekol amosif gereya. How do we know that whenever you add to something where you're not supposed to, then you're actually taking away? As in this example over here, where, as in this example over here, so you have Shinema, Kiyomar Alakim, Lysilchimen of Lysiguboy, where Chava told the Nachash, where in turn she had been told by Adam that Hashem had said, don't eat from the tree and don't touch it. Now that was a Hisafa, but it caused a Geroin, it caused something to go wrong in the opposite direction, because again, the Nachash had her touch it and then nothing happened, and she figured, and then the Nachash convinces her, if touching it, nothing happened, then eating it won't have nothing will happen either. So had there not been that Hisafa, had there not been that addition of not touching it, then the whole thing wouldn't have started. She would have said to the Nachash, we can't eat from this tree, period. And the fact that I touched it and nothing happened, okay, well, the Ebershin never said in the first place not to touch it. So call a Moisif Gurea. Again, Marsha is saying this is part of a potential argument that the Nachash could have made as well. The only reason I was successful is because Adam told Chava and then Chava told me an addition to the Ebershin's mitzvah, which was not part of the original thing. Rav Mesharshia says he's another source in Torah for this idea of Kol HaMosif Gereya Mehocha. We have a pasuk where it describes the Oren, Amosayim V'chetzi Orkoi. It's 2.5 amos long. Now, if you were to take off the Aleph from the word Amosayim, then you would have the word Mosayim, which means 200. So then, in other words, by taking off an aleph from the word, you're making the aron over 75 times as large. That's according to Rashi. Marsha says it's a little bit of a doichik though, because then you have the question, okay, but the Torah never actually says. In that case, then what? The dimensions of the Oren are given in Amos, but the word Amosayim itself means 2.5. If you take off the aleph and you're left with the word Mosayim, 200 what? 200 etzbois, 200 tefachim. How would you know 200 amos? Besides which, also Marashah says you really never find in Shemus etzem in nouns in Tanakh, you really never find that a silent letter is going to be left out like that. The word mosayim, after all, meaning 200, has a silent aleph in it. So Marashah says rather we're talking about, let's say, two people are talking. If one person says we're talking about things that are X number of amos long, well, how many amos? If the other guy says mosayim, then it means 200, and we know we're talking about amos because that was the topic of conversation. So again, by taking off the aleph in speech, you're adding much more and making it 200. There's an explanation from the Vilna Gaon that says an interesting other way of looking at it. So the pasuk says Amosayim v'chetzi orkoi. So if you were to take off the aleph and be left with the word Mosayim, then you would rather understand it to mean Mosayim. It's not the vav, rather. It's not the aleph. The Vilna Gaon says the letter that could have been missing is the vav. If you were to take off instead of Amosayim v'chetzi, if instead you had the word Amosayim chetzi, then it would mean and 2 amos is half the length of the oren, meaning the oren would be 4 amos long instead of 2.5. So you'd be Gurea, you're taking off that verb, and thereby you're adding an amma and a half to the length of the Oren. Rav Ashi says another example, Ashtei Esrei Yerias. The Torah mentions you have 11 Yerias. Take off the ayin from the word Ashtei, now you have the word Shtei, and Shtei Esrei means 12. So by adding the ayin, you're taking away 1 and making it 11 instead. You actually have, in this week's parasha, you have by the Nasiim, you have Yemashte Osir Yoim, the Nasi of Osher, the Eben Ezra actually on the Pasuk mentions an interesting idea. How does Ashte Osir come to mean 11 anyway? Where's this word Ashte comes from? And he brings an idea, maybe it's related to the word Eshte Noisav, like, so it means like thought, like a person has a thought of something beyond 10, and he doesn't really like that, Of Rosh Noisav, yeah, he doesn't really like that explanation, but yeah, okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Ches'ir, that's your right, Sivan. Ches'ivan, okay. The Pasuk says the famous thing about the Pasuk says about the 600th year of Noach, all the fountains of the heavens and earth will open up, and the Zohar famously says that in the 600th year of the 6th millennium, the wellsprings of Chochmah from above and the wellsprings of Chochmah from below will be opened up, and the world will be getting ready for the 7th millennium. So, and we have Chochmah Satorah, where Chochmah Sibila is Chochmah Satorah, and Chochmah Sibila Sata is Chochmah of Umas HaOlam, and we take a see at that time, Tofresh, 18 1840 was a time of a tremendous explosion in Chochmas HaTorah, in Torah's Chassidus, and in the and in the natural sciences and in inventions and discoveries and all kinds of things like that started tremendously in at that time in the 1840s and then have continued from there ad Yom HaZeh, preparing the world both B'Gashmias and B'Ruchnias for Yemos HaMashiach. Continuing with halachas of tzitzis. So here we were talking in the last few sifim about a talis that you borrow from somebody when you're allowed to make a bracha on it, when not, and we talked about what happens if you borrow swings from him and if he knows you're using the swings for tzitzis or not. Now, to begin with, suppose you have a talis that to begin with belongs to two people. So two people pooled their money together and each one paid $100 towards the talis. Such a talis would be chayiv in tzitzis because it says our kanfidi dehem, and that means loshen rabim. So it means even a beggar that belongs to Shutfim is also chayiv in tzitzis. And the idea would be each of the Shutfim, when they're wearing it, can make a bracha on it.